Welcome to the Pints and Polishing Podcast, the most influential and listened to podcast in auto detailing. Welcome to the community.
Hi, welcome to the Pints and Polishing Podcast. I'm Marshall. That's Nick. You can find us at hypercleanstore.com or the Hyperclean Specialist Group on Facebook. All right, Nick, we're going to do some buy and sell. And listen, I'm buying. I finally hit a moment and I go, yes, this is my moment. This is what I'm buying. And it started with naan. You ever eat naan?
Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah, I like naan. I like anything kind of bready like that. So took some naan, put in the air fryer, put on the bottom side first, then come over to the top side, put on some cheese. You can take some cheese of your choice. I'm a white cheese guy, so I went mozzarella. Definitely is where I would go. Then put, little tomato, put some Italian seasoning, finish it off with some Parmesan back into the air fryer. Dude, it's like you're better than grandma made it. For you, that's what we would say, right? For us, we'd go, boy, it's like better than going out to eat at an Italian restaurant. Like it was pretty dang good. I had some of that. I had some coffee. I know it's odd to compare, join those two together. But I really enjoy that as like a little snack. It's something I like to do. So then on Sunday morning, had some coffee. Listen, I'm telling you, there's something more and more magical about walking out and doing a rinseless wash on your car to get started for the day. Like it's like it puts the rest of the day into this ambiance of yes. So I'm buying. I'm buying that little snack. And I'm still buying rinseless washing, enjoying the birds chirping, having some nice 70-degree weather finally, and going, this is what it's about.
Oh, I'm right there with you. Weather's breaking out here. Weather's breaking there. Best time of year. I'm going to buy. I got a call late Friday night. Hey, had some family stuff come up. I got 4 tickets to UFC 300. They're yours. Come pick them up. I don't think anything of it. I get to go to a lot of fights. I'm pretty fortunate. I call 3 buddies. Obviously, they were pretty excited that they got the pregame going Saturday morning about 9 a.m. in my pool. Fights don't kick off till 7:30 p.m., but, hey, good for you. So I got my 3-year-old daughter back there jumping off the waterfall, having the time of her life, and I got buddies in there just going through my pool fridge like, it's an open bar at a wedding.
That Nooner stock went down, huh?
Oh, yeah. It got hit hard. And I was out. I told you, I was out picking up a couple cars for a customer. I get a text. They're in the pool. I'm like, dude, the fights aren't until 7:30. It's 9 a.m. They're ready to go. Yeah, but it turns out, we probably see, one of the all-time fights. We see Max Holloway and Justin Gaethje. Essentially, Max Holloway's winning, calls it out to the center of the octagon. Let's fight it. Let's throw blows. They throw blows. 1 second left to go in the fifth. Knockout. And the place just goes nuts. I mean, I've been to fights now going back, UFC fights going all the way back to like 2002, 2004, live. I saw all the greats. It was just one of those moments, right? For anybody that watched it on pay-per-view, it was even more electric in person. And you get to these moments where you're just like, dude, I can't believe I was here. And, star-studded. There's all kinds of people there, from internet famous to real famous to everything famous. And the place just erupted. And so it was a fun time. Glad I got that. It was a lesson, Marty, in what we always tell people. If you have tickets you can't use, don't be the guy that goes on the internet and goes, hey, I paid $100 each for these concert tickets. Somebody, if you just give me what I paid for them, hey, man, you got a bad break, give them away. It always comes back to you. So, yeah, UFC 300 in the building. It was a lot of fun.
Good community lesson there, definitely. Oh, what's it like, though, electric for you? So when I think of live moments that are electric and I think of sports, there's a couple of them. One in particular was the Spurs coming back to the Thunder. We were down 2-0 in the series. Yeah. But we got KD, we got Westbrook. Listen, I'm loving where the Thunder's at right now.
Dude, they got an MVP candidate, SGA.
Yeah, they're making a great little run, which is fun to see. Yeah. You know, and we see here that, you know, they put it's cool. They put that electric that comes across the stadium and the hair starts, you know, and you just start feeling it. Do you get the hair raised? Are you that guy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can't help it. I mean, I still, even though this was an incredible knockout, I've seen small venues, big venues. I remember a knockout, Bud Crawford, who's many consider the best pound for pound fighter right now in boxing. I saw him against this guy called Postal, or whose name Postal. And we're like two rows off the ring, and Jess is with me, and he lands his body shot. It made a noise I've never heard. So it went from electric in the crowd to people couldn't believe what they just heard. Then it went electric again because it was a knockout, but it was like, it was such a violent noise. Yeah. I mean, that mine would probably all be fights, but I have been to like the Indy 500, those kind of things that, you know, when you get into the final laps, that kind of stuff. I'm trying to think. I mean, I've seen LeBron play in Cleveland when I was still in Ohio. That had some atmosphere. But you just kind of remember things. And one of the things I tell people, I was just talking to a guy on our team about this morning. If you've never been to a WrestleMania, you don't really know what electric is. Those people go crazy. I mean, crazy. And now The Rock is back and he's a heel. And the stuff on social media, you're like, dude, this wrestling thing's a whole different electricity.
Wow.
Oh, my God. Is that The Rock's music?
It's,
you know?
Wild. It's wild.
Dude, when they played Steve Austin coming out, I thought the roof was going to fly off that place.
So have you've been to one, huh?
I've been to two WrestleManias. Yeah, no, I was a big wrestling guy growing up.
No, the only little wrestling thing I went to was like some podunk town in we were driving through. I was with a buddy. This was in college, and he was coming back from Arizona to Oklahoma State, right? So he'd gone over there, then he was wanted to come back to college here. So I flew out there and then drove back with him, and I really don't remember where we were. He was like, hey, you want to go to this wrestling match? I was like, sure, why not? You know?
Dude, so we're in our seats for the prelims, and I've been fascinated with this thing coming across my social media. I think it's called like Hillbilly Fights or something. It's in like Kentucky, West Virginia, Ohio. The crazy thing is these promos are just bonkers. Like, they just make me laugh to no end. I'm trying to stream these fights while we're sitting at the UFC on Saturday in the prelims. My buddies are like, dude, you're sick. I'm like, I don't know, man. You put two guys fighting, and they almost got me hooked. I couldn't connect. I couldn't get the service right. But I was trying to, like, connect to these hillbilly fights while I'm at the fights. So I get it, man. That kind of stuff. I'm of the Jackass generation. You know, that stuff makes me laugh. I can't help it. Remember tough guy competitions, all that stuff. I was all in on that stuff.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go back and play a little game from the past. Here we go. A little would you rather for those of you old school folks that know that game. A little would you rather, right? Would you put non-OEM parts on a car, or would you polish by not, you know, polishing over compound, not actually removing the compound? All right. Let's start at the OEM parts, because finally, it's official. I finally said, okay, I need to just make the phone call and get the Jeep's windshield replaced.
Yep.
Right? It's been too long. And, you know, it's about to be Jeep season for me. So it's like, all right, I got to get it ready. And I go, listen, OEM or not OEM? Because this is a question I get asked. Hey, which one do you want? I go, it's windshield. It's a 2011 Jeep.
Yep.
Yeah. Non-OEM, I'm in.
Yeah.
But what are you? I mean, do you have a threshold? Do you have what do you do when you need OEM or non-OEM?
Well, in your case, if I had, and a lot of people are, this is being dictated to them. If you have a lot of technology through your windshield with the modern car, you basically have to go OEM. The aftermarket for that doesn't support it. On a 2011 Jeep, yeah, I'd be okay with a non-OEM. I mean, that's been perfected. They got it handled. You know, they got all the specs. It's not high technology running through your windshield, there's no problem. Obviously, you know, you get into your car's, you know, 5-10 years old and the aftermarket is in a pretty good spot, I'm okay with it. You know, if I go to a body shop to make sure it's back to OEM spec, I'm going to go OEM and I'm going to fight to the tooth to get that because I was just in an accident, right? So I want to protect myself in some capacity that I have control over. I think this is really situation based, right? Again, if you have an ultra expensive car, I would always vouch for OEM because you don't really know what could trigger another service that you don't want to do, right? So it is so situational with OEM or non-OEM, and it depends on the situation you're in. A 10-year-old Toyota has good, you know, aftermarket support.
What about essential to non-essential parts, right? Is there times where you would choose OEM or non-OEM? Because let me just tell you, walking inside of dealerships, not every dealership uses OEM parts
through
the whole process. They pick and choose themselves of what, and this is brand dealerships, and this is from the operations director telling me where he was going to buy stuff out of China from and where he was going to stay parts here in the U.S.
Yes, yeah, I think that's kind of, dirty is the wrong word, but it's pretty much the right word. It's like that to me, if I go to a dealership and I'm going to pay the dealership price, I would make sure that I ask the question, hey, I'm coming to you because I want all OEM parts in my vehicle, right? That would be the reason that many people could argue that you go to the dealership for services, you get all OEM parts, but you're giving a scenario where that's not the case. So I would basically specify, if I went to their place of business, hey, I'm coming to you because I want all the OEM parts. It's really tough now because, you know, so many people don't tell you they're using non-OEM parts, you know, and you may just assume that they are. Like you, in this case, you go to a dealership, it's a BMW dealership, and you just assume they're going to use all BMW parts. But like you just said, if this guy can cut a corner here, if you can save a nickel here, still charge you full price because they're not going to give you the price break. They're going to keep that money.
Part, right? So
yeah,
not like the engine.
Yeah, I mean, I get it, but I think if you go to a dealership, me personally, I would assume that they're using OEM. I would assume that would be the reason I would go to the dealership. You know, maybe that's me being naive. That's okay. But on things I want OEM, I just go in and specify, I want to keep this car all OEM. I mean, I that's what I would do. I have a threshold and I don't think I have a rule that I could tell people. There are just certain cars, like my 2008 BMW, I would keep all OEM, right? It would just make me feel better. I'd get a peace of mind out of that. You know, other cars I've owned, you know, I owned a Corvette I didn't care. I didn't care much about the car. I bought it on a deal. I knew I was going to resell it. I maybe don't have that feeling. So I think it's about what you want in your car, but you got to remember, you better go specify to people because if not, they're going to cut a corner and go non-OEM. That's what they're going to do. And they're not wrong to do that. I'm just saying that's what they're going to do.
And when you say most mechanics, I would say most mechanics, if you just go to a mechanic shop, you're not even really going to get that option first. They're going to give you what most people want, which is the better deal.
Yep. I agree with that. And that's why I said, you just need to go in and specify. If that's something that's important to you, then specify that. I want you to buy the OEM part. I want to see the box from the OEM part when I come back. I want to make sure that's in the car.
But so is there a value of car that we should have that threshold?
No, I don't think so. Because again, most OEMs aren't making their parts. They're vouching for the part that's being put in the car, right? Like it's not like Ford's making all of their parts. They're not doing that. But if it goes through the Ford brand that it makes you feel better, then I don't have a problem doing that. There's sometimes that you want peace of mind. You know, if I own a Bentley or I own a Ferrari, largely you're going to be stuck with buying directly from the manufacturer. And again, they didn't make the part. I understand that. There are just certain cars. And again, if you just care about your car and you want the peace of mind that it has the stamp BMW or Ford or Chevy on there, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. It's your money, right? You're spending it on your car the way that you want. But I think most of us probably have non-OEM parts all over our car, and it runs just fine.
Yeah, but do most of us, you know, go ahead and take compound that's sitting on the paint and then just polish over it and call it a day? This actually is something that a lot of us do. Have I done it? Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely, I've done it.
That's a good process.
Is that the elite way, though? Right?
Because it can be.
Can be. How? How can it be?
Well, it depends on what kind of compound you're using. You know, if you really know how to work the compound down all the way where the abrasives have diminished, then going right over it, there's no problem in that. Some of the issues guys would run into on this is they don't work the compound long enough. They switch the pad out. They go to finish down that compound with a finishing pad, and they still see trails and swirls because they don't understand their system that they're using.
Okay, so you're saying in the circumstance that I've got a compound and I just switch the pads out. I mean, switch the pads out and then put polish on that second pad.
You can do that, but if there is a lot of abrasive left from that compound that you didn't work, you're going to get an adverse reaction. But again,
you're
this is where
do
it comes
a one
down.
Step on a two step.
I mean,
it's going to take you two steps to do a one step, right?
Yeah. Here's what I would say. If I was going to do that with today's technology, and we've shared this on this podcast, put two dots of compound, two dots of polish, and then just do a one step. That to me would just make it faster. And then I wouldn't have to worry about if I broke everything down the way as far as I thought or whatever. Again, and you're bringing this up because we got a comment on one of our videos.
Yeah.
And I appreciate these comments.
Agreed.
But this person went and watched somebody do this in a 30-second or 1-minute video on TikTok and didn't realize this guy has perfected how long to work the compound to make it advantageous to then go back over it with a polish. Had he worked it less, he would have a bad reaction and keep cutting deeply while he was trying to polish it out. Then you'd wipe it off and you go, what the hell happened? Well, this guy has a process that he shared, and I appreciate that. But you got to remember, that's hard to get across in a 1-minute video, actually what it looks like to diminish that compound down to a point where when you go over it with polish, the compound doesn't have an adverse reaction inside of that process.
So we should probably just compound and then polish, or use a true, you know, all-in-one, one-step type product.
Yeah, I see this trying to be taught, and it's valuable. It's hard to get people to understand looking through that compound and knowing it's broken down enough not to have swirling and things keep happening, and a person goes, well, what happened here? Well, what happened here is you didn't actually work your compound far enough. Then you put the polish on top. Then you started working the compound again inside that polish. And all of a sudden you just had a bad situation.
Yeah, it's like the polish is trying to then combat the compound at the same time the polish where the compound's cutting. Like it just.
But if you know it, but here's the thing. If you know what you're doing, you can do that. Right. Great. Like that's what you and I say all the time is like, this is the problem with the internet. Like this is good information if you get to see it in person happen. Right. Like if you actually get to witness how that actually works, cool. Is it easy to get that over video? I think it's going to be tough. I mean, you're going to have to work at it. You're going to have to put the time in. And like you said, or my way, your way of just compounding, then polishing, that's obviously the surefire way. Or my way, just put a couple dots on and go about your way.
Yeah, absolutely. So your way is like, instead of doing the compound and then going over and reapplying the polish, you're just going to put the two of them together. And I was saying at the beginning, I've done the compound and then come over and then put polish on a pad and let the compound that's already on there, I remove it while I'm polishing.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But you're right. You do have to get that compound worked all the way down, get it done, right?
Yep.
And then you can do it. It does seem odd, though, which is what I said. Is that the elite way? There's going to be some people that I know would go, absolutely not. You cannot do that. You have to remove the compound first. That is the way.
So, none of this is the way, right? You and I talk about this all the time. You need to get a process built. Whatever process you choose, you need to do it your way, the same way every time to get consistent results. And if this is the way you choose, that's the way you choose. But if it's all in the name of a one step, and we have a product that we're really working hard on development, just get a really good one step product that gives you enough cut and enough finish that you don't have to do all of this in the name of a faster one step when it's not a one step, right? That's where you get into this. Guys really are not sophisticated enough when starting out. I wouldn't have been, you wouldn't have been, to understand sort of that one and a half step, which is what I would call this. That's a really tough thing to get good at, right? And save yourself time. Now, when you're good at it, it does save you time. When you're not good at it, it takes you a longer time and you have a problem. With the chemistry now and the way abrasive technology has come, find a good one-step product. And I promise you're going to save time, you're going to get the same results, and then you don't have to worry about this. It is definitely effective. It's definitely something that you and I have done. I would say it was a little more popular in the rotary time. No questions about it. This was a way to save time in rotary and really cut down on things. But have we come past that? I mean, most of us would say, hey, man, just find a really good one step that gives you plenty of cut, plenty of finish, call her a day.
Yeah, if you're amazing, you can do a Jeep in an hour, you know?
Hey, correction in an hour. You know, 90% correction an hour on a Jeep around hinges and door, you know, hood stops and all this other stuff. That's crazy. I got to really start working on my speed.
One day you'll get there. All right, so one day we talked about my coffee behavior, and you did that same thing, laughed and couldn't believe me with coffee in my vehicle. Actually, that's on a YouTube video that will be coming out later. You know,
first of all, hold on. Don't misrepresent me. I always get the heat here. We're not going to misrepresent. I have no problem with you drinking coffee in the car. You had a in-the-house mug driving the car. When one of our vendors gives us free high-end travel mugs that you have, how many at your house? 15, 20, 50? How many do you have?
It's not that big. Come on.
How many do you have? 10? You have 10.
I got 3.
Oh, then where are they all going? You giving them to the staff?
Yeah. I sent some out your way. You didn't bring them. What's going on?
That's true. So it has nothing to do with coffee in the car. You had an open mug driving in the car.
And in case you're like me and Rachel, you happen to spill coffee while you drive. You know, there's a lot of us out there. There are. You know, I'll get to actually use this.
There it is. For those that can't see it on camera, there it is.
But for now, I'll just go with the open cups. So Rachel actually spilled coffee on herself, which I have also done. She found a great way to get coffee off of her, which we also talked about in the video, is if you're one of the people that enjoys riding around with coffee, you're not as, let's just go ahead and use the word, anal as Nick and have to have lids on everything, and you like openness and you're free about it, hey, great. Choose your lifestyle. It's all good. If you happen to spill, Enzyme is a great product for that. Now, what I love about her post inside the specialist group was that she talked about she was going on her way to a detail. And this detail was from a guy that she had met that was at a car wash and going to town on his car, doing his job. And she struck up a conversation. She gives a great post and talks about, hey, there's a lot that can happen if you just discuss car care with others who love car care. Might not be the exact same style as you, but you do love car care with somebody else. And that was wonderful to see.
Yeah, I think you and I I've learned a lot in the last 3 years that I was not plugged into for a lot of my career, which is not taking for granted what you think other people know or don't know. Right? We all know what we know. There's guys listening to this that know a lot about detailing. There are guys that are just starting out taking care of their own car, or maybe starting as a side business or going full-fledged into PPF or whatever it is they're doing. But I think one of the things that hit me is when I started visiting tint shops and PPF shops, they largely are not high-level prepping cars to our level as detailers, right? What I would do to prep a vehicle, right? And so it doesn't matter what walk of life, whether it's that, you know, do-it-yourself car wash or the guy driving through the car wash or a PPF shop or another detailer. One of the things that we all do, we're all guilty of, is we just take for granted that everybody knows what we know. And sometimes it's valuable to step back and say, hey, I don't know what this person knows. I'm just going to go over there and shoot the shit. And what you'll find out a lot of times is they'd love to know more. They just don't know who to ask. They just have never had anybody talk to them.
A lot of confusion in the marketplace, right?
Sure. Sure.
Like I've had conversations this morning. You and I have been on phone conversations. These are with chemists at major brands, major companies that send us raw materials. And they have confusion about what goes on from what they make that goes on then to out into car care, whether that's a car wash or you're going out to wash the car by hand. There's a big confusion just in the lingo with understanding when you spray or when you wipe, or there's a lot of confusion. I think that was some of what Rachel's point and others that would go, and if we could get past, oh, this guy was using X brand or this guy was this way, and go discuss, maybe then we can become a specialist in our area.
Yeah.
Maybe then we can build out a track record of valuable information. Here's the caution there, Nick. Here's the caution. I think there's few people that would walk over, first of all, and strike up a conversation. Big props to Rachel for doing that.
Yep.
Second of all, I think that most of us would struggle on what to say. And they might want to be that, hey, this.
And you're doing it wrong.
Yeah,
you're doing it wrong. For guys that we know that do really well at car shows, they're very open-minded individuals. They don't judge because somebody's doing something. And regardless if people think something on this podcast because they hear us talk, you and I don't. I don't judge somebody that goes to a car wash. I don't judge somebody that is out on their driveway using a chamois. Do I wish those things weren't happening? Yeah, I mean, I'm like everyone else. But I don't judge it. I don't really give it a lot of thought. I don't think somebody's bad for taking care of their car a certain way. We have this older woman that lives in our neighborhood that I see her out with a sponge and Dawn dish soap on her car every week. I've stopped and given this woman our chemicals and said, hey, I got plenty of these at my house. You ever need some help.
Did you give out? Hold on. What was that?
Yeah, no. It's about the same bottle of you spilling coffee on me while we were driving, you know, with the open mug. So we'll just take it and call it even. But, you know, again, she's going to do it her way. But every time I see her, she has a big smile on her face. She takes care of her car the way she wants. It doesn't look to the level that it should for the time she's put in, but she's going to do it her way. And if she ever wants to talk or, you know, I see her, I try to, you know, ask her how she's doing and is there anything I can help her with, or does she want my guys to stop by and help her out? But at the end of the day, the judgmental nature is something that exists in the car care world. If you're not doing it this way, you're doing it wrong. And I completely understand that because we all inside feel that way, right? On some level, like I just wish people would do it, quote unquote, the right way. But Rachel kind of proves that if you just go at it with an open mind and want to shoot the shit with somebody, which is kind of what we've told anybody that goes to a car show just to enjoy a car show, man, just go shoot the shit. you know, you don't have to tell everybody you know everything. It'll come out in time. You go to the same Cars and Coffee for 6 months, they're going to figure out you know what you're talking about, and they're going to come to you more. But if it's from that judgmental way of, you got to do it my way, which is prevalent in this industry, and by industry, I don't even mean the professional. Think of the prosumer and the people you see online that think they follow somebody and that somebody's giving them the top level knowledge, which we've debunked 8,000 times on this podcast when we've heard things like, you know, cross-linking and other words used. I think she deserves a lot of credit. We have a lot of people in our community that are a lot like Rachel, that they understand they're just trying to go out there and talk to somebody. And if they can provide a helping hand, they do. If that person doesn't want a helping hand, they just kind of back off and go, hey man, do you. And I think that's a hard thing to do. I mean, I'm not saying that's easy, but it's very effective.
It isn't easy. And a lot of us will have to give our opinions, right? It feels like, in a sense, that in a discussion point, you're going to have to, because, well, for instance, the conversation I had earlier, this guy had, you know, seen stuff online. There's a lot of people that sell, you know, raw products that then don't believe what us as detailers say that we're doing with them. Because he, for his quote, you know, there was that brand that was selling all online, right? Has the 11 on it, okay? You know, he bought some. Trash, right?
So, those are his, by the way, those are his words, not ours.
Yeah, agreed. Like, he doesn't value then, as a chemist, what we do as detailers because of what was being put out on social, because that does get lumped in. It does. There's a lot of confusion in the marketplace, and many of us will feel the need to then give our opinions on social, give our opinions in public, give our opinions. Do our opinions matter?
Man. You can unpack this from a business sense, from a product sense. And you know, when Marty's talking about a chemist, we're not talking about people that blend car care products. We're talking about people that supply, you know, household companies that make cleaners. They provide industrial companies with additives. They provide us with additives. And one of the hurdles we have talking to these massive chemical companies is based out of social media, right? Because a lot of these chemists aren't 75 years old. You know, they are on the internet. They are on social media. And they're like, you know, the things that you guys say and they keep like lumping everybody in. But it's funny when you go back and you go, but you've used good stuff before. Yeah, I have, from XYZ company. It's like, well, yeah, then that means it's not BS. It just means that you got to just take this other marketing ploy and move it over here, right? And when you get to opinions, especially when you start talking about business, you know, my opinion's only as valuable as what the marketplace pays me on my opinion, on my execution of an idea or whatever the case may be, right? And a lot of us think our opinions are extremely valuable, but they're only as valuable as people pay me to give them, right? And that goes for, if I have a detailing company, I say I'm the best detailer in such and such city. Well, if people aren't paying you consistently to detail on a high level and they're paying you lots of money, and this guy over here is getting lots of money to detail, whose opinion is right? Well, the marketplace is saying this guy over here has the more valuable opinion, right? And sometimes we all can get stuck in an opinion and think that our opinion matters. But when it comes to business, especially, your opinion does have a value to it, and it's what the marketplace is willing to pay you.
But if I disagree with what somebody's saying, I should voice my opinion, shouldn't I? I mean, because that's how somebody gets heard, and then that's how I'll grow with awareness.
I don't think you and I see that happen, though. Do you? I mean, if we're just saying this out loud.
It's a theory.
Yeah, I mean, I see a lot of people say a lot of things in Facebook groups. those people largely are not garnering any success out of arguing in a Facebook group. This could be about politics. It could be about car care. It could be about lawn care. It could be about plumbing. It could be about anything. Those we all want to give our opinion on things that we feel like we know something about. But we've kind of said this in an episode, I think, last week, when it's like, you know what? Sometimes it's okay just not to say anything. You know, we have people that vast majority of people react positively to what you and I say. But we also have a percentage of people that don't act so positively, and they're entitled to their opinion. We're also entitled to just go, hey, man, they have their opinion. I'm not going to argue with them. And there's a high value in that to me. I'm not, if you got a different opinion, man, it's all good, right? When it gets disrespectful, the few times that it does, do you have to put your foot down sometimes? Sure. But, you know, one thing you and I have learned is there's a good thing to do with people that disagree with you and say, thanks for watching, and just move on with your life.
Love that line.
Yeah. I mean, hey, man, your peace is worth more than arguing with somebody that just, man, we're talking about taking care of a car. We got a way we view it. If it helps you, great. If it doesn't, swipe. But there's a lot of people that don't want to swipe. And that's the culture that we're in for a small number of people, for sure.
So that's one aspect of people voicing their opinions. And this, I want to ask this question. I want everybody to hear this question. I want you to really absorb this question. And there's a part of you that I want you to get a little bit upset when I ask this question. All right? Why do detailers think their opinion has value when their business isn't growing?
Yeah, man. This is something that I've wrestled with, you've wrestled with, that you've had an opinion on something, you swore up and down you were right, and it didn't translate in the market, and you didn't make any more money from it, and it was a bad idea, it turns out, because if your opinion was that valuable and you could provide value with that opinion, then you would make more money, and usually you make a lot more money. I am not married anymore. I've learned through a million mistakes, I'm not married to any one of my opinions. It's free to change when I get more information, when I learn more, when I see more, when I get a different perspective. And if you don't go through life that way, especially as a business owner, I think it's easy to get stuck. And the number one way we see this is nobody wants to work. That's an opinion. No one wants to work, so I can't hire anybody. Well, I got 1,000 businesses over here that are hiring, and they continue to hire, and they continue to bring on team members. I mean, I had a customer of mine put up a new casino. They hired. How does that happen if nobody is looking for work, right? You have this opinion, and it stifles you because you're not willing to look at the execution of that opinion and see if that's your problem.
And I think immediately a lot of listeners will go, that's not apples to apples. That's apples to oranges. That's a casino. That's a guy with a lot of money.
Yeah. I mean, I understand that. But I think those starting positions were somewhere between 18 and 25 bucks an hour.
Oh, yeah. We're not going to pay that much. That's too much, Nick.
Well, and that's a decision that you have to make. But we've been screaming on this podcast basically since the start of COVID that the world changed, that, hey, if you're not going to be in that 18 to 25 bucks an hour starting out, you're not going to be able to hire. Like, I can't fix that problem, right? So you have an opinion that a starting detailer should make 12 bucks an hour. The rest of the world's paying 22 bucks an hour to push carts at Target or to start at a casino on the entry level. I don't make the rules. You don't make the rules. The marketplace makes the rules. And so overnight, we went from 15 bucks an hour being a good starting wage for an entry-level position to being 22, 23, 25 bucks out here. So if I want to hire, my opinion that my entry-level detailing is worth $15 starting out is irrelevant. So if I stay married to that opinion, I'm not going to be able to hire because I don't want to pay the extra 10 bucks an hour. I'm not saying right or wrong, or if that should be the starting wage or it shouldn't be. That's what the world is, and that's what you got to play in. And so you can see how opinions can get you stuck, because your opinion becomes irrelevant when the marketplace says that's not how it works.
But if you're going to say that my opinion doesn't matter, that means I don't matter. And therein lies, in a sense, the ugly side of the marketplace. You don't matter. Like,
yeah, we don't. I mean,
it's an ugly side, but it's also the most fascinating and wonderful side of it. It absolutely is. Because if I don't matter, then great. My idea doesn't matter. Okay. My idea doesn't matter. Why is that great? And why does it matter that I don't matter? Seems odd, right? And I should matter. It's me.
Yeah. Look, man, I've had a lot of bad ideas. I mean, a lot of them. I've tried things that just didn't work. And, you know, when you're married to, I think we're seeing this a lot with the crowd that wants to do heavy correction and heavy coding application. And they want to base their business on that. And they want to make $5,000 every time they touch a car. It's great for the guys that can do that. And I certainly know some people that have made a good living doing that. I've also watched the 99% completely fail in that model. The idea doesn't work for you. Doesn't mean it doesn't work for somebody, but it doesn't work for you. And when you're married to an idea that doesn't work and you're married too long to that idea, guess what happens? You go out of business. So that's why I say, I mean, if you look inside HyperClean, we're having a conversation about the next 2 years. Let's share some insight. We are so hard on ourselves about what the next 2 years need to look at like financially for the company, that if they don't meet that standard, Marty, you and I have already talked about some really hard things. We're going to have to look back and say, we got to figure out what we did wrong. We got to do better. We got to do this. We got to do that. But we got a 2-year time frame to meet a certain amount of revenue into our company. That's non-negotiable. We're hard on ourselves about where we want to be in business. And when you're hard on yourself, you're never really going to be married to an idea, because it's all about making money for your business. And that's not an ugly word. Right? A lot of guys get real up in arms. Like, I do this because I love it. I love what I do. I don't wake up hating dealing with HyperClean or hating dealing with VR. I still love what I do. I still love being a part of this whole thing. But I am running a business, and I do have ideas that we need to execute on. And if we don't execute on them, or we do execute on them and they don't work, I got to be able to wash my hands and go, hey, man, that was a bad idea. We tried it, didn't work. On to the next one. But if you're married to these ideas, it's going to be hard to be successful in business, because I don't know too many successful people in my life that are married to any idea. They're married to what works in the market. That's what they're married to.
You do have to get through some stuff to get to that point, right? At least in my opinion. I think there's going to be people that take a little offense at this moment. There's people that might feel like their toes are getting stepped on. I think it was one of the very last community pubs, because there's people that, you know, they get to points and they arrive and they go, yeah, this is where I'm supposed to be. Share a story of a detailer locally that I've known for a long time. He got to a point to where he could be, and then he went away, right? Like, there's people that I love getting on phone calls, and they'll want to tell me of, it's not about the podcast where we joke about the story, but they'll just go, hey, you know, let me tell you a little bit about me. And I feel for them, because, you know, I agree that, you know, we've gotten on phone calls with companies and you got to give a little bit of, you know, yep. Give your background and give a little bit of your story. But there's some of us that get caught up in the idea of the story, the idea of we are the person, we're going to do it. I love it. At the same time, I go, what's that carrot in front of the tortoise was always what I wanted versus smoke and mirrors and thinking that I'm going to get something and it's going to be some big. I always liked one step after another step. hope, I think, is an interesting word at this point, because we have ideas. You mentioned execution. How do we get through all the execution aspects that go through it if we don't have hope? So let's go over if we have an idea, because we do, right? I mean,
you could
go through the podcast from the beginning to then when you were here to, you know, the whole course of what we've done as a company since. It's like there's so many ideas that you and I have, the way you grew your business, the way I've grown my business, the way you've grown other businesses, the way other people grow businesses. You have to execute on the idea. And therein lies some of the biggest challenges that keeps people from having hope that they'll accomplish it. What's the very first, if we want to think execution, where people fail, what is it that causes it? What do you think the biggest problem is?
They don't realize, sort of like I didn't realize, when you choose to start a business and then you have an idea inside your business, then you have to execute on that idea and what that entails. So the minute that you open a business, you're not opening a detailing business or a PPF business or a tent business. You're opening up a sales and marketing business. So there are a lot of people that go, I'm going to open up a PPF shop. And they go, I'm the best PPF installer. I do the best work. I do the best this. I do the best that. And it's all about the skill of installing PPF or doing detailing. The execution of an idea is going to come down to how you can market it and how you can sell it to your customer, whoever that person is, whoever that, maybe a company, could be a company, could be a business, could be a person, could be a retail customer. And if you can't sell it and market it, the idea is not valuable to your business. That's what so many people don't want to hear, and why we've had the message here for a long time, which is once you put business owner next to your name, trying to be the best detailer is going to come to an end point. You're only going to get so far doing that. And then if you can't get out of that and realize you're running a sales and marketing business and you need to get people to understand what you bring to the table, the idea can't be executed, right? So if I'm somebody that says, I think my area needs a high-end detail shop that does PPF and tent, that's a viable business we've watched a lot of people make a lot of money at. The second part of that idea is, are you the person that can execute on that idea? And a lot of times, that's a really ugly conversation with ourselves of like, holy shit, can I actually make this happen? And a lot of times guys go, I can't make it happen, but I'm going to fake it. I'm going to be the entrepretender, you know, our new favorite word. And I'm just going to hang on and I'm going to show everybody, which leads to bitterness because they didn't really understand that the beginning part of the idea is not only the idea itself, but are you going to do the things and do you have the talent to make the things happen behind that idea?
Are you going to do the things? This is a question I asked you. It's a fun question I've heard asked, you know, around. Do you bet when you go to the horse races, do you bet on the horse or do you bet on the jockey? Right? How does somebody get to where they're going to be? Do you do the things? Comes down then, right? Execution, 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 day after day, hour after hour, month after month. That can seem like a long time to think that, hey, we're supposed to be doing everything.
Yeah.
And we are, right?
Oh, yeah. At the beginning, you're doing everything. For eternity.
And that seems like an overwhelming task, I think, to a lot of people. Execute every day on what things? What things are we supposed to execute on?
Yeah, I think you and I see something. I think this is, I'll talk about friends and family that I know or close business people that I know. There's a real separation of who's going to put in the time. That's a separation you and I see constantly. Don't you agree?
And that's, I'm glad you said that, because that's what I said. What are we going to execute on? What things? So if we're thinking, I've got to become a sales and marketing, I've got to learn how to detail, I've got to then, and you could fill out this whole paperwork of all this stuff that needs to go into it. Where do I put my time, and how much time do I put
in? Yeah, I mean, I love the idea that we all could work 40 hours a week and fit everything in.
Let's go.
Sounds great.
Hell, there's some countries take months off, don't they?
Okay. Yeah, well, also those countries that take months off usually don't produce anything that you love. You know, I mean, let's be fair. Some do. You get the Ferraris of the world, but a lot of, when's the last time you're like, I want to drive this Spanish car that just got imported? I mean, don't say that too often. Let me buy this Spanish TV, from Spain. That doesn't happen. There's a reason why it doesn't. And so, again, I'm not telling people to work your life away. I think that's the first thing everybody hears is I'm saying, don't ever go out and have a good time or don't ever enjoy yourself. But, if you're in the first 3 to 5 years of your business, man, it's going to be consuming. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You get better at managing that as you get more experience. That's what should happen. But I think only you know if you're going to put the time in. And you can lie to yourself. There's times in my career where I got frustrated and maybe didn't put as much time in as I should have to get through some stuff. And I learned the hard way I needed to push through that or whatever. But I think you and I both know the number one thing we see in business ownership is people don't know the amount of time it's going to take. They don't know the amount of stress you're going to have. They don't know what they signed up for. So part of that idea phase that if we're giving guys a tip is you got an idea to start a detailing business. It's a great idea. It absolutely can make you a millionaire. We've said that on this podcast before. The next part of the idea is, what are you willing to do? What am I willing to do? What is the guy or gal out there willing to do to make all that stuff a reality? And if you are honest with yourself and you're like, man, I really like working 9 to 5, getting your business off the ground is going to be pretty tough in those circumstances. Because there's going to be times when you have to put the gas down at busy season and you got to work 9 to 9, 7 days a week, because that's what you have to do. And if you're not willing to do that, I'm not saying right or wrong, I think you're in for some hardship from what I've seen. And when you talk about execution, man, a lot of it is just effort. I try to say this on a podcast as much as I can. If you guys think I have something special you don't have, I don't agree with that. Like, we're not talking about LeBron James. Okay, he's 6'8", he's 260, he can jump out of the gym. If you don't have that, you can't be LeBron. Like, those are the bare, requisites to be LeBron. I just showed up. And I just kept working myself through my mistakes and being extremely difficult on myself, extremely hard on myself, to where if somebody slammed the door in my face, it didn't bother me because I was already hard enough on myself. I think a lot of guys get caught up. They're not willing to be tough on themselves. They're not willing to say, hey, you're not the greatest detailer and you got to get better. You got to be the better installer. You got to keep trying and you got to keep working. That's kind of how we talk in my company. I don't do the whole let's celebrate everything. We celebrate when it's right to celebrate, but the other time we're hard on ourselves. Marty, you and I, inside HyperClean, we're really tough on ourselves. And we really hold ourselves to a high standard that when we do get something, it doesn't rock our world. That doesn't mean we have everything figured out or we're running the perfect business. But I've been in business for myself now in my 14th year. I know something. I don't know everything. But I know that time invested, if that's not part of your idea and you're not willing to go to the ends of the earth to make it happen, business ownership is going to be really, really rocky.
Going to the ends of the earth to make it happen. I think most of us are going to say no. I think most of us are going to say no. I think most of us do have a threshold of how much we're willing to go to the extent. I think most of us would then outweigh. Listen, it's not fun. It's not fun not going to soccer practice. It's not fun not going to games.
Yeah.
Not fun showing up late. still dirty from the detail, or, you know, knowing you missed something that your kid really, really enjoyed. It's not fun. I love the perspective that you have that I want everybody to realize too. You know, that kid getting 16 years, 12 years, 8 years later, a car when they turn 16 that they can be proud of, you know, a life that they don't have to ask and wonder if they can get, fill in the blank, you know, whatever level that is for you, right? Like,
yeah.
What work is it going to take? I love seeing the people that have been, you know, hey, we're pregnant. It's always fun. It's always fun.
Yeah, it's great.
Well, okay, where'd you start? You had fun.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah, the fun is still there. The fun's different now. Now there becomes even more responsibility. I was talking to one of our distributors last week. He was a little older than I am. And we were talking about the aspect of where you're at in life and how time, you know, where that's, you know, each hour of the day meaning time and how fast or slow time goes. And man, having the responsibility and then seeing the responsibility of providing for others and then going, hey, I've got this idea. Execution now becomes even more critical. The work and time you spend becomes even more point to stop, you know, being into this other and only focusing on certain things, because what you really want maybe is going to take time, and that execution is going to be over and over and over of, hey, we did this the other day, right? Hey, we spent a lot of time on this project and we went in a different direction.
Yeah.
And you looked at it a little different than I looked at it. And I said, you know, I don't consider time to be wasted if I get to a decision point that I need to choose to go a different way.
Yeah.
I at least got to that point where I could choose, right? You look at what ideas that you have and what execution needs to be done in order to make that idea come to a reality.
Yeah. I mean, that's why you and I have this conversation. We'll talk to a lot of guys that are in their early 20s and they're doing great. And they'll blow off an afternoon or they'll blow off two afternoons. Or, you know, we hear from distributors, yeah, man, I got this kid. He's really talented in my area, but, you know, he wants to be done with work every day at 1 because he doesn't want to work his life away. When that kid comes, when you want to buy a house, when you want to buy a nicer car, when you want to wear a nicer watch, which by the way, is always going to come. Comes for us all. Everybody wants something a little nicer when you get, you know, 5 more years on you or whatever. And then all your decisions led you to, man, you did have a lot of free time when you were 25. You did only work half days, but now your daughter can't go to the school she wants. Your daughter needs a medical procedure you can't afford. All that stuff hits you in the face. And I've tried to say as much as I can in my life, personally, as well as on this podcast, money's not to buy goofy shit. It's nice when you have that kind of money. I mean, we can buy what we want. But money's to buy your family and yourself options in life. You know, you want to move to a nicer neighborhood, that magically takes more money. If you have to say, no, we can't move to a nicer neighborhood, then you look back at some of your decisions, you go, oh shit, I kind of pissed 5 years away where I didn't work that hard. And I have a lot of family and friends that feel that way. You do too. That they'll talk to you when they hit 30, 35, and they're like, oh yeah, I kind of wasted some years here, not working as hard as I should. But money is an option tool, right? It provides you, your kids, your family, your future self, all of these things that all of us want, whether you tell yourself you do or not, right? And whether you buy those things is irrelevant. And I think that's the fun topic of all this is, like, man, we have so many guys and gals out there killing it inside the HyperClean community, and they're doing so well, and they're so dialed in, and they're really killing it. We know there's this segment of all of this where somebody's not killing it, right? And they're telling themselves they're killing it. And they're telling themselves they're the best detailer, or the best tint guy, or the best PPF guy. And their idea is great. And everybody will see one day. And they're not looking at their idea and saying, I just have the wrong idea at this moment. And I need to change up my idea. I need to go at this a little bit differently. I need to execute a little bit better. Because even the worst idea executed really well is better than the best idea that's not executed at all. Right? And so one of the things that you and I talk about is in your idea phase or when you're struggling, you got to ask yourself if you want to do this or not. Because it's okay to say you don't want to. It's okay to say, hey, man, this wasn't for me, or this idea was wrong, or this doesn't fit what I want out of my life. Like, that's cool, man. I mean, realizing where you fit in this whole economy is the secret to all of it. Because if you find out where you fit in, you're going to make the most money you can make. Right? Like, you know, guys that started at a dealership who hated being a detailer, but then went to the service desk, and 5 years later, they're the service manager. Once they found out where they fit, these dudes are having six-figure careers, and he was just lost 5 years ago. But he's like, I just didn't like detailing, but I really like the service drive, and I'm really good at it, and I enjoy it, and I don't mind the extra hours because I like what I'm doing. So finding where you fit is the part of this idea and execution thing that I wish somebody would have discussed with me 14 years ago, because I would have done things much quicker. I would have separated myself from ideas much quicker when they weren't working. It's okay that they don't work. It's okay that shit fails. It's okay that things don't work for you in the moment. Switch it up. That doesn't mean run 180 degrees in the opposite direction. That means take a step to the left, take a step to the right, switch this out, do this a little differently. And that's why I always say to people, man, in your idea phase, you do have to identify whether this is for you or not. Because if you lie to yourself, you're only wasting your time. You're not wasting my time or Marty's time or your neighbor's time. You're wasting your time. That's time you can't get back. And you could have been doing something that you were really good at over here at something else. I mean, and you could have been 5 years further along in that pursuit.
Yeah, because we eventually got to ask ourselves the question, what am I, right? We all want, as I think there's a lot of us to go, what's my purpose? People want to know purpose in life or what am I supposed
to
do? You got to figure out who you are, right? You got to figure out what you enjoy. Do I want to be a fisherman or not? I love that quote that you said from one of my favorite football players. The only football player I have is jersey.
Yeah, fish don't jump in the boat. You got to throw out your line, and when it comes back empty, you got to throw it out again, and you got to throw it out again, and you got to throw it out again, and you got to throw it out again. And, you know, the fish isn't just going to magically jump in your boat. And I never really thought about it that way, but that's exactly what we've probably been trying to say for 3 years, which is you got to make some shit happen, man. And again, it all starts with you and I and anybody listening being truthful about what you're actually good at and what you can actually make happen in the marketplace. Business becomes way simpler when you know where you fit in. And if you're somebody that's like, man, I love to detail cars, but I hate talking to customers, you are a prime candidate to go work at a very high-end detail shop and make a great living, because that is happening every day, whether you believe it is or not. I have guys making incredible livings working at VR. We got shops in Arizona where guys are making incredible livings working at those shops. In Washington State, in Washington, D.C., in Florida, you don't have to own a business. I'm glad if you want to, but if you're like, dude, I just love PPF and cars, there's great PPF installers making $100,000+ a year. I mean, you got to get in where you fit in, man. You got to figure out where this thing really evens out for you. Because I know guys working 50 hours a week, making a really good living laying PPF or detailing a car or paint correcting and ceramic coating. I know a shop that's expanding into a second, third, fourth location looking for bodies right now. Going to start guys at $30-$35 an hour. You don't have to own a company. It's great if you do and you figure out this idea and execution thing. There's also nothing wrong looking up a couple years into it and going, hey, man, I don't enjoy it. This isn't for me. It's okay. And again, I wasn't talked. Nobody said this to me 14 years ago. You know, nobody walked me through. You got to have an idea. then you got to be truthful about the idea. Then you got to execute the idea. And then when it doesn't work, you got to go back to the idea. You got to refresh the idea. Then you got to execute again and again and again and again. And it, I mean, dude, we learn that every day at Hyperclean. We learn that every day at VR. And it doesn't bother us, which is why it's been okay for me to be in business for 14 years. But I know people that get bent out of shape about every little thing that happens in their business. Guess what, man? Business ownership is not the right move for that person.
And here's the way you know, right? Here's the way you know that person is because they complain. And it's everything. There's always a complaint. It doesn't matter. There's always some type of complaint, whether it was the car, whether it was the customer, whether it was the person, whether it was the product, whether it was this, the sun, or this. Something always happened. There's always a complaint. I think most of us that then succeed out of the complaint status, we go, hey, we just enjoy figuring things out. We know the problems are going to happen. We're not thinking that a problem won't ever happen. It's just we got to know when the problem happens and what we're going to do to figure it out.
Yeah, I love that. And I think I have a term that I use in a lot of conversations. It is what it is, man. Shit happens. I mean, shit happens. Got to figure it out. Got to you know, be okay with it. I've had really bad situations happen. And if you don't get to that it is what it is stage and just get on to figuring it out, you can drive yourself crazy. And I've been guilty of that a few times. Don't let me fool you. I've done a lot of, you know, getting caught up in a moment in a situation and let it eat up at me. Now, 14 years in, it is what it is, man. Somebody burnt the paint on a car. Somebody, you know, dinged a bumper. Somebody dumped out a whole bunch of stuff at HQ on accident. Look, man, it is what it is. Let's move on. Let's just move on, right? And if you don't get to that stage, man, business ownership is miserable. And I've watched a lot of friends that I'm just like, dude, you're too talented to be this miserable. Just literally, this guy over here will give you $150,000 a year. He'll handle all the headaches. You just don't go, and they, you know, some listen and some stay miserable for 10 years. Then when they finally fail, they're like, oh, I wish I'd have done this 10 years ago. It's like, yeah, man, it just wasn't for you. And that, don't make owning a business something it's not. Because it doesn't mean you're any better than someone else. It doesn't mean you got things figured out differently. It's just a way to make your way in the world. It's okay, man. Like, that's all that it is.
Yeah. Some of us enjoy problems. I don't know why. We just do.
Well, I have to. I mean, Tommy Tech, we had another tech situation at the beginning of this podcast. We're now back-to-back episodes with the same microphones we've had for a year. You know, but yeah, you're right. Like, there's just some of us that it works well for it. There's some that it doesn't. And that's kind of what makes the shit go around.
Yeah.
Right. Like, we all got to find our place. And again, hopefully it comes clear of this idea and execution is the name of the game. Yeah. And if you can't execute, then you got to go back to your idea and vice versa. You got to start figuring that stuff out, and you'll have a lot more fun if you just don't get married to your ideas and just realize it's just an idea in the moment.
Absolutely. All right, everybody, let's go, right? It's time to now take those ideas and execute.
And we all got to give it a nice golf clap. Marty made it through without unplugging his microphone. Thanks, all right, guys. We'll talk to you next week.